People of the Knife by Rhea 314, read by Rhea 314. So, Taylor, tell me again what we know of these people, John asked, steering the jumper in for a smooth landing on MX-44839. They call themselves the Thoans. They keep to themselves on their own world, but they are visited by many, and thus a sort of trade hub. They are known for their fairness and also called truth speakers. Other worlds will often bring prisoners here for fair trial. The Thoans pride themselves on their honesty. They are also known as People of the Knife. Hey, wait, what does that mean? Rodney asked. You make them sound like Quakers, but the knife bit doesn't fit.
Quakers? Taylor asked, looking to John for clarification.
It's a religious group on Earth.
Yes, right, truth-telling pacifism, not knives. Explain the knives, Rodney prodded.
Taylor frowned. I'm not sure. I never visited this world myself, though several of my people have. Ronan? She turned for help from the tall, dreadlocked man who had been sitting silently with arms crossed up to this point.
They carry knives. Always each person has their own.
But they are not warriors, Taylor quickly added.
Well, John said as he lowered the hatch, we'll just have to be careful. He patted his P90.
And I'm sure it won't be a problem. Come on, let's go meet the locals.
They disembarked the jumper, McKay grumbling about knife-wielding psycho-aliens as they went. They were greeted at the entry to the village by a youngish blonde woman. She could not have been older than John, but she wore an air of leadership. She inclined her head to Taylor and smiled.
So you are the Thosian we have heard travels with the men of Atlantis and the last of Setida. She nodded to Ronan in turn.
I am Jaharta, mother of this village, and my people. I am pleased to make your acquaintance. Call me Joe.
She stuck out a hand to John. He gripped it in a firm shake. Her fingers were slim, fragile but well calloused.
Colonel John Shepherd, we've heard many good things about your people.
Joe smiled, showing a row of near-perfect, startlingly white teeth.
I should hope so.
She turned to Rodney, who was looking as he usually looked when faced with authoritative, shapely blondes.
If he is John, you must be the scientist Rodney McKay. I believe you'll be well fascinated by this world.
She shook his hands before turning to view them all.
She smiled and clapped twice. Now, shall we retire to somewhere to discuss what it is you seek from my people?
John nodded and fell into step as they followed her, dragging a slightly dazed McKay into the village, towards the largest central dwelling. John couldn't be sure what the buildings were made of, some sort of stone possibly, a metallic rock that shone blue-green in the sun like the slick from an oil spill. The dwellings were geodesic domes and curved connecting tunnels. They entered and stepped down. The inside was a spacious hall with long tables and a floor curving gently into a tapering slope to a central dais around which the tables were arranged like spokes on a wheel. We hold council here and our greatest feasts of harvest. Joe motioned to an archway leading to one of the rounded hallways. This way. She led them to a room with low bed-like mattresses piled with pillows and shades of red. She folded herself down upon one, kneeling with her hands clasped, waiting. Taylor easily sat, and John and Rodney took seats as well, if with more maneuvering on Rodney's part to sit comfortably. Ronan stayed standing a moment longer before he too sat. What do you wish to discuss? Joe asked, her question directed between Shepherd and Taylor.
We've heard you trade fairly and would like to establish relations with our peoples. We can offer medicines and other goods in return.
Joe considered, but then shook her head.
You are the people of Atlantis.
She raised a hand to still further comments.
We know much and little of you. We would trade with you, but require two things. Knowledge of the Wraith and the knowledge your people have of the ancients. We do not leave our world, and the Wraith have not been here for many mothers. But we have heard stories. Knowledge is power, and the more we know, the greater our chance of survival.
Joe nodded solemnly. John looked to Taylor and then to Rodney, who gave him I'm not in charge shrug.
What sort of information do you require, and what would you do with it?
Where the Wraith are, and where they are headed, which worlds they have culled, which spared, their weaknesses and technology. The last part, Joe continued quickly, is not necessary for trade relations, but rather as a favor between peoples. We merely wish to know more of the world. Others we trade with, however, would wish to destroy the Wraith, and knowledge is power. Of the ancients,
We merely wish to know history, and to be taught to read their words, a skill my people lost long ago when the Cullings were still recent in memory." John nodded. "We will trade with you," he said. Jo smiled again, surprising brightness that made her appear younger. "Then tonight we will feast. Tomorrow there will be a brief ceremony to bind our peoples, and the first exchange of goods." At the word ceremony, alarm bells went off in his head. They'd had enough mildly poisonous teas, strong brews, and chicken dances to last a lifetime in concerns. "What does this ceremony entail?" John asked, as Jo began to rise. "We forge a knife in each of your names, that you may be as honest to our people as we will be to yours. It will not hurt. Every child of this world has a similar experience. It will not mark you as one of our people, for our ceremonies, for our own, are quite different. But it will mark you as an ally, something many cultures of Pegasus respect." Jo gave a final nod and left. "What she says is true, John. Those who trade with the Otha are considered blessed. One man among my people was of the knife, though I never saw him with it as a child. The other adults respected him for it." "Well, that seems okay. These are our rooms, then, I presume?" Taylor nodded in response. "I think so." "Well, then let's explore the village a bit. Get to know these people before we commit to them tomorrow." Rodney grumbled something about staying behind and actually getting sleep for once, but John dragged him along, following Ronan's broad strides across the street. Rodney was wildly curious about these people. Their society wasn't advanced technologically, but he kept seeing odd little things of ancient design as they wandered the village. There'd been one odd energy reading as they flew in that Rodney still wanted to know more about. So many planets had ancient outposts, long dead or dormant, and this could easily have been one of those worlds. Rodney mused over all of this while they meandered between the rounded buildings. Shepard had stopped to speak with a local boy playing something like marbles in the dirt by a side door to one of the dwellings. What was it with Shepard and children, or Shepard and aliens, really? They saw him and they liked him. Rodney sighed. He didn't even like kids, but Jo, the mother, leader, whatever she was, had known him. A nice change for once. Rodney watched the boy, who was nodding enthusiastically. "See?" he said, with a grin, holding out a metal-looking object. Shepard reached towards it, fascinated, but the boy yanked it back, looking horrified. "No, you mustn't touch it," he scolded, glaring at Shepard like he was an idiot, which Rodney understood. "Don't touch strange alien weapons" was right up there with "don't eat alien food before testing" and "don't get eaten by Wraith." The boy held it out on the flat of his palm, face screwed up in concentration. The metal began to glow, a latticework like stained glass, following the veins of the metal workmanship. Then a thin blue strand of light sneaked out of the metal, straightening into a crystalline blade. Definitely ancient. "It's my knife, you see. If you touch it without my permission, it could kill you. I thought everybody knew that. My enemies die. My family feels nothing. My Hattie will be bonded. It is my blood, right?" Shepard nodded, but Rodney could tell it made just as little sense to him. He walked over and crouched down by them. "Can you bring me to someone who can tell us more about these knives?" The boy nodded and smiled. "My grandpa was a forger," he said proudly, leading them down the street. "We should know more before we have to get ones of our own," Rodney pointed out. John conceded and radioed Taylor to tell her where they were going. The man in question was old, wrinkled, and had mostly gray hair. He looked at them over a pair of purple-tinted spectacles and put down a manuscript as they entered. "We want to know about the rot knives," Rodney said immediately, blunt. John sighed. "That was Rodney for you, straight to the point." The man smiled. "You must be the visitors of Atlantis. Jo was very excited to make your acquaintance. She is my cousin's daughter, so I knew her as a girl. It will be my pleasure to tell you of the history of the knife." He gestured for them to sit. The boy John had been speaking to rolled his eyes and left. "It is a long story," the man explained. "He has heard it many times. I am Hiat." He shook their hands as they sat. "Now no one remembers the first knife. Some people say this is how our people have always been. It is hard to say. There are three rituals of the knife, that of birth, bonding, and death, and all these rituals are led by truth," the man explained. "When a child is born, 6 hours after birth, but before the end of the first day,
They are taken to the room of forging. There, a knife is made. If the child is male, their knife is used to remove the skin around the head of the penis. If the child is female, the underside of the left foot is cut. This first blood marks the blade and ties it to its owner. It does not hurt the child, for blades will never hurt their masters. For women, this process is twofold. To protect their children, the blade must also be dipped in the first menarche. This makes the blade loyal to her family. We keep our blades with us at all times. They protect us and keep us truthful. They are part of us, from birth, like an extra limb. Children at a young age learn to control them, lest they hurt their peers. This is the ritual of birth. So basically, they're all circumcised, and they have a religion weirder than Earth's. Rodney groaned to John. Hiat ignored him, or didn't hear him. The ritual of bonding ties our families. When our children are of age, in control of their knives, and finish with the ritual of birth, they may choose another with whom to live. This process we all call courting. The pair come to the mother with their request, and at the end of a year, should they so desire, they may bond. Our people do not take this lightly. Many never bond, for a bonding is never reversed, only by death. Some are hasty in their choice. Those are separated but cannot bond with another. The bonding of knives ties two people together. There is a ceremony. It allows the knives to cut but not kill. The couple trades knives and share a clasping of cut right hands, thus binding the blood forever. This is the rite of bonding. The last rite is performed at a person's death. As soon as one of our own has passed, their blade is inserted into their heart, and the family puts their hilt to that of the one who has gone. This is how we preserve our memories and truth. These are the rituals of the knife. For people not our own, we give half knives. They will not kill, and you can take them off without feeling as we do, but they mark you. How do they mark us? Rodney demanded. The smallest finger of the left hand is given a cut. Thus the blood and the blade are bound, but it is not bound to the essence. Rodney glowered. He hated crazy and uninformed aliens. May I see the forging room? He asked. The blades were definitely of ancient make either way. I'm afraid not. Maybe when you are a knife brother you may ask Joe. Rodney sighed. All right, thanks. Come on, Shepherd, let's go. Rodney stood and left quickly, John following with a genial wave. I know they're of ancient design, I just can't think what they were made for. This whole bonding to blood thing and the way the child's knife lit up. But they can't be all by gene carriers, can they? Shepherd, are you even listening to me? What? John asked, looking up to see Rodney glaring at him. Rodney waved his hands in annoyance and went back to pacing. John continued his game of solitaire. Just about then, Taylor walked in, followed by a smug-looking Ronan. Rodney hadn't known Ronan could carry that expression. What happened? What did he do? Rodney demanded. John turned to look at them as Taylor simply smiled, shrugging. They have a sport here similar to your boxing. We came upon a tournament of sorts. You won? John asked. Ronan shrugged. They don't even go off-planet. They're not really warriors. I gave them some tips. They want me as a coach. Taylor smiled and John laughed. Rodney threw up his hands and sat down. The feast would be in an hour anyways. He might as well waste time. He grabbed Shepherd's deck and began shuffling. Hey, John glared at him, but took the cards he was dealt. Rodney was glad they'd at least have time for a team game of go fish. The feast was plentiful, which Rodney thought boded quite well for their request for food items and trade. But now Rodney was just as curious about this forging room and potential ancient tech there. And why the Wraith had passed over this place. That might have been the foremost in his mind of it all. John's too, he suspected. They ate and talked animatedly with the locals, crop yields, mutual acquaintances with other planets. Rodney hated that sort of small talk, boring. But at least Joe was hot, and she directed her words at him as much as at Shepherd, which might be a first. Either way, Rodney retired toward the room, full, mildly dissatisfied, and very tired. Ronan was already sacked out on one of the mattresses near the door. Taylor had followed Joe out to see some of the art and cultural significance to both their peoples. And John, walked out of the back room Rodney previously hadn't noticed in his undershirt and pants, toothbrush sticking out of his mouth. "Hey, McKay," he nodded, turning to dig in his bag and triumphantly come up with floss and head back to the bathroom. Rodney stared, then shook his head, yawned, and commenced to remove his shoes. By the time he was done, Shepard was back, and Rodney went to brush his teeth. Taylor still hadn't returned by the time he was climbing into bed, but John radioed her and said she'd be back fairly soon. Rodney lay in the dark and listened to his teammates' breathing, letting Ronan's familiar snore and John's whistle guide him to sleep. Taylor woke them near dawn the next morning. Rodney attempted to put a pillow over his head, but Taylor enlisted John to help haul him out of bed, and Rodney gave in. The ceremony was going to start first light, its birth marking their own rebirth into the knife. Rodney continued to grumble out about religious nuts, but followed them out into the great dome. Maybe they'd be civilized and have coffee. For once, Rodney was not disappointed. The ceremony began with a steaming cup of dark liquid, more like some of Earth's health nut coffee substitutes, but with enough of a kick and bitter flavor to satisfy as it scorched across his tongue. Rodney passed the cup on to Shepard with a sigh. At least that'd be worth trading for. Joe stood before them in a sort of ceremonial robe. Beside her was an older woman holding four dormant knives. They stood in the center of the hall, Joe on the dais, the tables pushed out of the way to the wall, and people of the village in a loose circle around them. "Today our people welcome those of Atlantis into our fold. We come before you that our two great peoples may know justice, truth, and peace from one another, and that our union may bear the fruits of trade and success. As this world is a mother who loves all who are born to her, I, as a mother to our people, welcome you, brave men and women of Atlantis, into our family. May you grow healthy and strong," Joe proclaimed. The surrounding villagers echoed her final phrase with a murmur of, "And strength and health go with you." Joe stepped down from the dais. Taylor held out her left hand and Joe took it, making a small, quick cut on the pinky, then pressing the now glowing knife into Taylor's right hand. She then did the same to Ronan. While neither Taylor nor Ronan flinched, Rodney still braced himself. He was surprised to feel no pain, just a tingling warmth on his finger where the blade had cut his skin. He looked at his hand speculatively and found the wound was already closing. He blinked. How was that possible? Joe had cut Shepard and was now speaking again. "And so, brothers and sisters, welcome your own. This," she raised one of the med kits they'd brought for trade, "is the full circle of our goodwill." She handed John a bag of dark berries, Rodney eyed with excited interest as they might very well be the coffee-esque plant. John and Joe clasped forearms. In a movement the audience copied with each other, with suddenly increased chatter. And it was over. The dome echoed with voices and the moving of benches and tables. "Will you stay for breakfast?" Joe inquired. And John nodded yes before going to help move the furniture. Rodney stared around at all the hubbub before finding a table and beckoning Taylor over to help him pick a breakfast that wouldn't kill him. Elizabeth was pleased with their work on Ulfa, the first mission to go as planned after a long string of wraith, angry locals, and accidentally landing a puddle jumper in a quicksand-like swamp. They handed the food goods off, and Rodney settled in to enjoy some days landbound and happily working in his lab, yelling at people. It was during that yelling part that he first noticed it. He was in the middle of a tirade about how wrong the young engineer was when he realized the kid was gaping in shock, but not terror. He reviewed his last sentences with dawning horror. He'd set out to berate, tear down, and otherwise flatten the imbecile's brain, but had wound up loudly pointing out the flaws but also praising the ideas behind them. In essence, Rodney McKay had just said, "You fucked up, but that's okay, it was a good thought." Which it was, but it was still wrong. In practice, even if he himself had thought it impossible at first. Rodney snapped his mouth shut. For the rest of the day, he found himself saying things he had no intention to. Finally, when Cadman casually asked him how he was doing in passing, and he answered, frustrated and a little frightened because I keep telling the exact truth, he flipped out and ran all the way to Elizabeth's office. To his surprise, Ronan was already there with a look as perturbed as Rodney had ever seen on the man. Elizabeth looked between the two of them after their explanations.
And this all started happening after your visit to MX-44839? Rodney nodded. Elizabeth furrowed her brow thoughtfully. I recently spoke with Tayla. She is feeling no such effects. And John has not come to me. Was there anything different about the ritual for you two?
Not that I remember, Rodney said.
There was a long moment of silence. Then, like many of Rodney's brilliant plans, the explanation hit him between the eyes.
The knives.
What? Elizabeth asked.
The ones they gave us. I've got mine.
Rodney fished around in a pocket before retrieving the faintly glowing metal.
They make our peoples truthful to one another. Ronan, do you still have yours?
Ronan nodded and pulled his out of a sheath on his leg.
See, John and Taylor must have put theirs away where it doesn't affect them.
In fact, I think I know what these are.
Rodney exclaimed excitedly.
Elizabeth raised an eyebrow.
Well, there was a reference in the database to an interrogation device. It was meant to be a response to the Wraith ability to compel us to speak, but they couldn't figure out the compulsion, just the truth bit, which is why it keys to the wearer. They were made not to hurt the ancients. The Othoans must have adapted the technology, or, if they were the first location of the lab to make these things.
Rodney waved his hands about under Elizabeth's amused stare, and ran off back towards the lab, at her tacit smile of approval. Behind him, Ronan removed his knife and stared at it dubiously.
John learned the significance of the knife from a calm Elizabeth. Her demeanor clearly said, "It's fine, don't worry, McKay is on it." John radioed Taylor, but she'd already stored her knife with her box of Athosian items. She kept safe on a shelf in her quarters. John smiled at that and went to find Rodney. Rodney was predictably in his lab, fluttering between two computer screens, and his knife, which was glowing on the workbench in front of him.
"Hey, Rodney, not now, busy."
He flapped a hand in a shooing motion, paying John no attention beyond that. John quietly pulled up a chair to wait. Finally, Rodney dropped out of his frenzy and turned to glare at him.
"As much as I appreciate your friendship and ability to be quietly companionable, some of us has work to do, and you are very distracting currently."
Rodney turned away, picking up the knife, and turning it over to peer at the lattice work on the other side.
"I'm distracting? Rodney, I'm hurt you see me as a nuisance," John mocked.
"You're not a nuisance, it's just your—"
Rodney cut himself off, dropped the knife as if it were on fire, and quickly turned back to his work. John looked at him quizzically.
"From what, Rodney?"
"Nothing," Rodney snapped. "Just go away and let me learn how to turn this damn thing off."
John frowned, but he left. The quarters from the lab were empty, which surprised John, and John looked at his watch and saw what time it was. Atlantis's peak dinner hour. He had been quietly watching Rodney for longer than he thought. He wondered how close the other man was to disabling the knives. They were an interesting idea. Nobody wanted Atlantis's military commander and head scientist to have machines that forced them to tell the truth, though. That could be disastrously if it fell into the wrong hands. As John walked, he mused over what Rodney had been about to say. He'd been holding the knife. What truth would he not want John to know so badly? John had experimented with the knife earlier, having Elizabeth asked him questions to assess the danger they posed. Even trying not to, John had readily told her Earth's gate address. Of course, it was Elizabeth asking him, the subconscious governed truth more than anything else. Maybe you had to really not want the other person to know. And if so, what did Rodney not want to tell him? Rodney hadn't come to the mess all the time John spent talking with Taylor and Raddick. The last of the evening crowd was leaving, so John decided to call it quits. He grabbed a sandwich and two apples, a brownie, too, before heading back to Rodney's lab. Rodney had not left and was in almost the same place, though surrounded with a minor snowstorm of notes. Again, he didn't look up when John came in, just continued muttering and scribbling, flexing his fingers in a Rodney-ish way. John's chuckle finally caught his attention.
"Hey, buddy, food. You didn't come to mess. I thought you might..."
"Yes, thank you, Shepard. You're amazing. Now gimme." John handed over the sandwich and brownie, as well as one of the apples. He took a bite of the other one, watching Rodney carefully unwrap the sandwich before devouring it.
"I almost have it," Rodney pronounced, through a mouthful of sandwich.
"It's like... actually, you probably wouldn't understand. But I'm close. If I'm right, we can turn them off and on. And they'll be keyed to us, so only we can operate them. Like an individualized ATA gene. That way we don't piss off the Othans,
and we protect our secrets. Rodney rambled excitedly. John watched and nodded, smiling when Rodney'd finished. He asked quietly, "About those secrets earlier." "No, Shepard, drop it. Thanks for dinner, but I think you should go." Rodney's demeanor had gone stiff and icy. He glared obviously toward the door, directing John with his eyes. John growled in frustration, "Rodney." Rodney turned his back, stiff and silent. "Damn it, Rodney, I know how hard it is not to tell the full truth with those things. Now tell me what's so goddamn important to you that you can't restrain from saying it, because if it's gonna jump and bite us on a mission, I don't want our team to have issues because you, I don't know what," John ranted. Rodney slowly turned around. He was holding the knife. "It won't cause any problems. It hasn't already." He put the knife back on the table with a metallic click. "See? I wasn't lying. Now let it go." Rodney seemed dejected, almost sad or weary. John shook his head. "If it's not a problem, why can't you tell me?" He hoped it didn't sound too plaintive. Rodney closed his eyes, pained. "John..." John moved before he really thought. In an instant, he grabbed the knife and pressed it into one of McKay's twisting hands. "Tell me," he murmured firmly. Rodney's eyes were wide in shock. "It's you. I want you," he blurted. His face was horrified as he dropped the knife. It clattered to the floor and went dark. John stood motionless and Rodney ran. The thing about trying to find the best scientist in Atlantis was that Rodney knew the city almost as well as he did. And if she did not intrinsically love him, she protected him willingly enough, with McKay's technobabble and prodding. Thus, Rodney could be behind any of the myriad northeast pier block doors. Atlantis wasn't helping him out, and McKay was clearly hiding, or sulking. So John did the next best thing and started creating a ruckus, pounding on the doors and yelling. He'd eventually get to Rodney. It worked. 10 minutes later, an exasperated and seething Rodney flung open the 12th door. "I can't believe you did that," he bellowed. John watched his blustering red face and wondered where to go, what to say next, to not make this worse. "Rodney, it's okay. I don't care, or I do, but not... Can we just sit down and talk about this?" Rodney seemed to deflate. "Fine," he muttered, standing aside as they walked out to the edge of the pier. John flopped down, swinging his legs over the edge. Rodney sat down carefully beside him. "I never knew. I thought you liked girls. Blondes." "I do. Just not exclusively." "And you never thought to mention that?" Rodney looked at him like he was idiot. No. You're Lieutenant Colonel John Shepard, God's gift to women of Pegasus." John glared down at his hands. "I never called myself Kirk. It just happens. I mean, I never..." "Fine. You stand there and people fall in love with you. I'm so glad I'm part of a trend. Does that make it any better?" McKay shouted. "Hey, I didn't mean..." "Oh, fuck it." John threw a small pebble into the water with disgust. Rodney looked at him. I just don't know how to say no. I mean, I don't mind, but it's never my choice. Hell, I got married because... You know what? Never mind." Rodney continued to watch John like he was a math problem, a really complicated one. "Are you trying to tell me something?" Rodney asked, making sure he caught John's eye. John swallowed, took a breath. "Just that I wouldn't mind, I've thought..." John stopped, closed his eyes, and reached in his pocket. He drew out the knife, staring into its glow. "I've thought about you, us, there being an us. I didn't like that you liked Sam. I mean, well, I'm a military officer who can't have that sort of relationship. I've always wanted, but with my dad..." John turned, watching Rodney, knife dangling over his fingers. "You know, the first boy I thought about asking wound up getting beat up by a boy on the football team. My dad, he said they'd set a good example. I joined the football team the next year." John placed the knife aside. Rodney continued watching him, with an expression of something like awe on his face. John leaned in before he could lose confidence and kissed Rodney softly on the lips. Rodney was frozen in shock. John Colonel Shepard liked guys. Liked him. John watched him expectantly. Then suddenly Rodney was reaching out, his big hands coming up to cradle John's face, and Rodney was kissing him, mouth wide and warm, and sloppy, but different than John had imagined when he let himself those few stolen moments of fantasy. Rodney was real, heavy, hot, leaning in, and John went tumbling backwards on the hard pier with an uff that was swallowed by Rodney's following mouth. And Rodney was there, up against him in a way that made John's legs tense and his back arch as he writhed up against him. "Maybe we shouldn't do this here," Rodney panted against his ear. John tried not to whine as Rodney levered himself away, straightening and offering a hand to help John up. John used it to sling himself up against Rodney, clenching his fingers around Rodney's shoulders and rolling his hips gently between them. "John," Rodney groaned, "any idiot with a pair of binoculars." He feebly pushed at John, but this time John went, hearing the logic of military commander of Atlantis and chief scientist caught kissing not being a good thing. John sighed. Rodney smirked. "We could always go to my quarters. Everyone expects us to hang out anyways. They don't have to know what we do." John nodded thoughtfully, pulling Rodney in for one quick, searing kiss. "For the record, I don't really care who knows. Well, I do. I like my position. But I have a feeling if we're careful, we don't really have to worry. Taylor already knows about me, and Elizabeth would go to bat for us almost no matter what we do. I mean, you blew up a solar system and she still vouches for you. Hey, when will people get over that one? Also, you're so telling me about the thing with Taylor. How is it that she knew and I didn't? I'm your best friend." "We were talking about you, Rodney," John smiled. "Oh." Rodney looked almost abashed. "Now, what were you saying about a little privacy?" John followed a slightly giddy Rodney back across the pier, towards the city. She shone, her lights bright in the dusk. It would soon be too dark to see even with binoculars. Smiling, John took Rodney's hand.
The end. Thanks for listening. If you want to leave feedback for the author, you can do that at rhea314.livejournal.com.
I hope this wasn't too weird a story. I've never written anything for Stargate Atlantis before. There's no text version of this because I wrote it longhand and then didn't want to bother typing it out. So I like Podfic better, so that's how it is. The concept for this came from my psych class, and that mixed with thinking about some of the sword lore in the Protector of the Small series, and then I wanted to have a reason to have an alien race with this really weird set of ceremonies, and it worked pretty well with Stargate. So I hope that you enjoyed my crazy ideas. And thank you.